Hello, listeners. This is Paula Scataloni. Transformative Harmonics is an academy for individual and planetary healing rooted in ancient wisdom and modern science. We are here for those who are interested in being guided back to soul so they can step into their signature frequency and be in service of humanity. If you've been looking for a place to land and settle down, develop community, and dive into the psyche and soma in a way that is supportive, trauma-informed, and integrative, then our programs are here for you now. Our monthly membership circle is available for those looking for a one or twice a month option for themselves and supported by my writings and somatic practices and sound journeys through Substack. Our immersive program is a deep dive into your own, your ancestral, and the collective, so you can go through your own initiation and transformation into your signature frequency with a small, intimate cohort. These groups are closed, and they only open every other month. So please reach out to me if you're interested in one of our upcoming groups. If any of these programs feel like they resonate with you, go to my website, paulascataloni.com, and fill out an application or sign up for a discovery call. I'm happy to meet with you and give you more information to help you make your decision. We would love to meet you and bring your wisdom into the circle.
Welcome. I'm your host, Paula Scataloni, the founder of Transformative Harmonics, a podcast that offers listeners a synthesis of ancient wisdom and modern science.
Welcome, listeners, to Transformative Harmonics. I'm Paula Scataloni, your host. Today, I have a very special guest, Anne Baring. Before I introduce Anne, as always, I invite you to take a moment to slow down your nervous system, to create space for this conversation, to allow whatever resonates for you to find a home, and if the material does not, to simply know that you can always come back to it again. Anne Baring, PhD, was educated in England, France, and America. She is a Jungian analyst and the author and co-author of 8 books, including The Myth of the Goddess, Evolution of an Image, The Mystic Vision, The Divine Feminine, Soul Power, An Agenda for a Conscious Humanity, The Dream of the Cosmos, A Quest for the Soul. Her children's book, The Birds Who Flew Beyond Time, and her latest book, Divine Wisdom and the Holy Spirit, The Forgotten Feminine Face of God. The ground of all her work is a deep interest in history, as well as the spiritual, mythological, shamanic, and artistic traditions of different cultures. Her work is devoted to the recognition that we live in an ensouled world and to the restoration of the lost sense of communion between us and the invisible dimensions of the cosmos that is the source and ground of all that we call life. Welcome, Anne. It is a pleasure to have you here today, and I'm thrilled that my audience has a chance to meet you more personally, because I'm sure they have heard you on other podcasts, and so it's a treat for me to share this space with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Paula. It's a delight for me to be here.
Well, I have been a fan of yours for just a year now because I was newly exposed to your work. But I grew up in my early 20s and my early awakening with the work of Marion Woodman and of Maria Gimbutas and some of the pioneers in bringing the goddess and the divine feminine to our awareness and consciousness. And so I have been on a path since I was about 18 in the divine feminine and deep understanding. But I feel the culmination when I found your work, it was like walking into this library of history where everything had been brought together in this beautiful way. And since then, I always also became a therapist and using Jungian analysis and dreams and depth psychology. So
it's just so delightful for me to have you here, where you're able to hold so many pieces of this puzzle for us in our evolution that we're moving through. And so the language feels very fitting for me and my audience.
Well, thank you for understanding my work and bringing it into the world and helping me to get it into the world as well, which is lovely.
Well, let's do it. Let's do it. So I feel to introduce you, it is important to start with a few questions that you pose in your book, one of your books, The Dream of the Cosmos. And these were the questions that you felt religion or science were able to answer, which were, who are we? Where do we come from? Where do we go when we die? And why are we here? And so I thought we could start with that and then move into your experience of the evolution of this quest that you have been on with the divine feminine.
That sounds good. I should say that those were Gnostic questions, which are coming up in our time again. But those are the questions the Gnostics answered themselves 2,000 years ago. And they've been a long time hidden, so to speak. So it's good to bring them back into consciousness. And also, neither religion nor science have been able to answer them.
No. So it feels like this is what we're at the precipice of, this current evolution, where we're coming into a deeper understanding of those questions for ourselves through these pathways that we are going to talk about today. And your journey, which I loved reading about, started both with your mother was part of your journey as well, because of her experiences, mm-hmm. yeah, with the inside world, yeah, the unseen world, but also your dreams. And you had one particular dream many years ago that was your awakening dream, you called it, mm-hmm. in your book.
Yes, that's right. I describe it in the preface of my latest book, and also in The Dream of the Cosmos, because that was a true awakener. I'd been working, rather like you perhaps, along a path which I wasn't quite know where it was leading, but that dream gave me the absolute revelation of what I was doing and why I was doing it. So it was a vision more than a dream, and it was amazing. Do you want me to describe it, or will people read it in the books that they've already got?
Let's give them a hint of it, because I do feel that there is a common thread with many that are awakening that they might find with the dream, and we may give them a little taste of it if we can describe just a bit.
Okay, well, the dream was this, probably in my 40s when I was in analysis with Dr. Hella Adler, who was the wife of Gerhard Adler, who was the editor of Jung's collected works. So I was with her for 11 years, and roughly in the middle of that analysis, I had this dream. I dreamt that it was moonlight, and I came round the side of a huge dolmen, like the kind of dolmens at Stonehenge, just one. And the other side of the dolmen was a vast field of green corn or green wheat, shimmering emerald green in the moonlight. It was absolutely an amazing sight. And I was looking for my lost love, trying to find him, I think. I don't know who he was. Anyway, I skimmed with my feet just touching the bare surface of the wheat for mile after mile, going on and on. And I didn't know quite how far I should go. And I came to the edge of a valley. And I thought, should I stop here? And I did stop. And then I saw that on either side of this valley, which was quite wide, about a mile wide, there were two men, or one man on each side, and they were holding a huge net. And I found myself in the net and on my back, looking up at the sky, the night sky, because it was moonlight and all the stars were out as well. And I had this vision of the figure of a goddess, which filled the whole space between earth and heaven. She was absolutely gigantic. And she was neither young nor old, beautiful, mature. I think she had golden hair. I can't really remember. And she had an enormous wheel, something like the labyrinth in Chartres, in her abdomen. And she told me to look down at my own body, lying on my back as I was, gazing up at her, and I saw that I had a wheal also in my abdomen, but it was over on the left, and she indicated that I was to center my wheal. She didn't speak. That was her message. I was to center my wheal. Now, centering your wheel in Jungian analysis would mean becoming more conscious. In other words, I was too unconscious of what I was doing on this planet, and I needed to really ask myself some questions like, who am I? Where are we going? What am I doing here? And what is my task in this particular life? So those are the questions that came out of the dream, and I spent the next 40 years centering my wheel and writing the books. I was a Jungian analyst for about 20 years in London, and then I realized that really I wasn't fulfilling my full self. I needed to write because I had been giving many webinars and seminars and things. So I retired to the country at that time and devoted myself mainly to the dream of the cosmos. I'd written the other books before, but the dream of the cosmos. But I'd started the whole task of the feminine with my friend Jules Cashford when we were writing The Myth of the Goddess. That was in the 1980s when we were actually training to be Jungian analysts. And that was such an enormous work. It took us 10 years and immense amount of research. And we were really working like two minds with one exit, I used to say to her, because we would get the same revelation in the same time. We would ring each other up and say, I just had this. And she would ring me and say the same thing. So it was a wonderful collaboration, really true friendship and devotion to the goddess. Because Jules had a dream saying that she had to restore a garden that belonged to the goddess, and she was to go and meet me for supper, which she did. And that's how the dream of the cosmos was, myth of the goddess was actually formulated in that one evening of 4 hours. We planned the whole thing. So that was a good beginning. And then from then on, I then wrote my books with Andrew Harvey, the Mystic Vision and the Divine Feminine. And that drew me, as I went to the country to live, to write The Dream of the Cosmos, because I had plenty of time. And I thought, what is wrong with this culture? It has absolutely no knowledge of soul. So I called it The Dream of the Cosmos, which was based on one of the messages of my mother, which spoke of the dream of the water. And the dream of the water means the other dimension, the watery dimension beyond our normal consciousness. So that's why I called it The Dream of the Water, and I called it A Quest for the Soul, because I felt that really the soul needed to be restored in this very, very materialistic culture, which had no awareness of the soul at all. People were simply living on Facebook or whatever with no understanding that there was a deeper dimension to their lives. So that's briefly the story of the dream and how it galvanized me to really look into the goddess image. And I think I must have had the dream roughly when we were writing The Myth of the Goddess, and roughly at that time in the 1980s, when I was in analysis with Hella Adler. And she was the one who initiated me into the feminine. She really understood what the feminine meant, and she did her best to teach me as much as she could in the years that I was with her. And from there, I took it into the world. I felt that I had a message that needed to get out into the world through my books. And so that's really what happened. And one thing led to another. My understanding grew deeper. And then finally, in my final book, I thought I really need to give the whole history, which I'd done to some extent in both The Myth of the Goddess and The Dream of the Cosmos, but not really looking at the historical detail of how we lost the divine feminine and why we lost it and when we lost it specifically. So that was my task with this last book, and I feel I have completed it in the way that I think is interesting to people, and I hope will inspire them to look deeper into their own lives.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that is a good next question then. As you came to a deeper understanding of the why, which is very much in detail in this last book, what are the important pieces for people to understand? Because there's elements of this of history and religion and culture, and it's very comprehensive and complex, but maybe we can give them some flavor around the why.
Well, what has happened in the last three centuries is that we have become disconnected from the transcendent because of scientific materialism and the whole teaching about it, that we are the only conscious beings in a dead universe, which has no meaning, no purpose. So that is a terrible philosophy to give young people growing up. And this has been responsible for a great deal of depression, suicides, and general feeling of life has no meaning, and I might as well just take myself out of it, that sort of feeling. So I just felt that it was terribly important to bring this through. And then there's a beautiful image I have at the beginning of the book of the two hemispheres, the above and the below, joined together, which is what we have to do once again, once they were joined together. In Christianity, they were, and in some of the other religions also, but not really consciously, because people believed without necessarily understanding. And Christianity gave the belief and the belonging to a group, so to speak, but it didn't give the understanding of the whole. And to get the understanding of the whole, you have to go to alchemy. And I've spoken a lot in my seminars about alchemy. You have to understand that the soul, as it is, as it were, has to be transformed into a higher kind of consciousness. You have to work with the soul to develop that consciousness, because what we have to begin with as we come into this culture is simply the mind. We're educated to adulate the mind, to put all the emphasis on what mind can accomplish. But there's absolutely no understanding of the heart, no understanding whatsoever that the heart is the gateway to the soul. And if you don't come down into the heart from the mind, you don't know what you're doing in life. You don't know why you're here, what your purpose is. You don't discover your creative gifts, perhaps. You try to fit into the culture rather than asking yourself, why am I here? What is my gift that I bring to life? And discovering and living that gift, which is so important for young people to know that they carry a gift and that they need to discover what that is, that they've come to incarnate on the planet for a purpose. But if they pass their life just talking on Facebook or Twitter or whatever it is, they'll simply waste their energy and they will understand nothing. They get to the end of their lives having understood nothing.
Yes.
And that is a tragedy.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And we train them and ourselves. A culture has indoctrinated us into giving our power to the outside rather than going inside for that direct revelation, which is part of the alchemical process of turning inward for the answer from spirit and from soul. And so that whole process of learning how to turn inward is, as soon as we hit age 7 or 5, we lose that invitation.
Yes, because we get indoctrinated, as you say, into a different way of thinking and behaving, and that can last a whole lifetime without ever asking the question, who am I, what am I here for, or where do I go when I die? Because the materialist belief or materialism says that there is no survival of the soul because there is no soul and no God. So if you teach that people at the age of 7 or 8 that those ideas, they're completely, almost asphyxiated before they've started to breathe.
Yeah, they're cut off from...
They're cut off completely, definitely, from access to having us, to knowing they have a soul and to knowing that the body is very important as the holder of the soul, and then within the soul is the spirit. So body, soul, and spirit belong together. But they're taught nothing about that, of the existence of soul or spirit. And they don't know that they carry this divine spark within them or this divine consciousness, which has to be developed. It doesn't just sit there and tell you what to do.
Yes.
You have to do the work of getting in touch with it.
Yeah, hence the word spark.
The spark, yes.
To move into a flame.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
And so as you have moved through a deeper understanding, you've come into a deeper connection and way of talking about what soul is. And so do you see soul as the Holy Spirit, as the divine feminine aspect of the Trinity?
Not so specific as that, really, because it's much more. There is as Plato said, there is a cosmic soul, a collective soul that we all belong to, and our individual souls are part of that cosmic soul. We are part of the divine, and that's another thing we haven't been taught. We've been taught we're separate from the divine, and so we're taught that spirit is way up there, out of our reach, sort of thing, and we're down here, struggling on the planet and with our lives, without knowing anything about why we're here or what we're here to do, or the fact that we carry the divinity within us and that we are part of what we've been worshipping for 2,000 years or longer. This is something that I have discovered in my life, and it's very exciting because I think it could give people a much more greater understanding of who we are, that in fact we are immortal beings embodied in a material dimension temporarily. But this material dimension is like an epiphany of the divine ground. It's not something inferior to the divine ground. It is the divine ground, or is part of it. So it's sacred.
It's the
for
school.
That reason.
Yes, it's the school by which the soul is working on the material.
Yeah, we come here to grow our soul, really, or to grow in touch with our soul. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And are you speaking of the work? I saw a video of yours, a presentation on physics, actually, where you were...
Yes, that was Nassim Haramein. Yes. I did a course with him in 2013, a 10-week course, and I was so moved and impressed by that I put it all together into that webinar. And he said, that's fine, you can go ahead and do that. He couldn't understand how I'd absorbed so much in 10 weeks, but I had, and I put it together with Greek philosophy and a wonderful philosopher called Thales, and, you know, put it in a context that I thought people could understand, which I think they have done, because it's had a huge number of viewers, that particular video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we show it in my class. Yes, it's definitely, I've been following his work for about a year as well. And we were just talking off camera about the overlap of communities and the importance of, you know, layering all of this together. And so it was a beautiful layering of his material and yours. So thank you.
Good. I'm glad. Yes, I followed his courses as well, but I've lost touch with him. I was in touch with 2013. That's over 10 years ago, 13 years. And I've lost touch with him, and he's gone on to develop his own thinking in different ways. And he's based in Geneva now, or near Geneva.
Well, there's so many, we were saying, people in different communities with important messages that are all, it's important to bring these together into a convergence. If those that are saying yes to awakening need structure, you know, around this process. And so as you meet with people and present, I notice that there's certain things that you talk about in your books and your presentations on what does it mean to awaken? What does it mean for us to find the soul? And what are the different aspects of our consciousness and our way of living that we're opening to that we may have not opened to in the past? Some of that is being open to the perspectives that are held in the indigenous cultures and their understanding of the Great Mother.
Because they never lost the understanding that the earth was sacred, and they never lost the connection with the ancestors. They were always in tune with the ancestors. Also, they honored women and often gave them the position of being the wise director, so to speak, of the community. So there was a huge amount of wisdom there, which, of course, was bashed and boulderized by Christianity, trying to convert them to Christianity, instead of respecting their traditions. But that, I think, has passed, and people are listening to them now in many ways. And I, in fact, did a shamanic 9-month initiation with a Peruvian shaman, which taught me a great deal about this connection between everything. And I think other people have done the same sort of thing. But by whatever path you're led, we all will be led to where you're meant to be, so to speak. You don't have to try all the paths at once, because you couldn't possibly comprehend all of them together. Take them one by one, maybe, but not all together. and just go one step at a time and see where life wants you to go, because the heart will guide you and the soul will guide you and the spirit beyond too, because we are here for a purpose and it takes time to discover the purpose. You don't know it in your 20s, maybe not 30s or 40s, but by the time you're 50, you're beginning to understand and get to grips with it. And then you probably become a teacher of some sort, or you've entered in some kind of training which has enabled you to be a teacher of whatever particular branch of life that you feel qualified to teach. So I think that that's important for people to know, not to worry, not to get in a fuss, because at 25 you don't know everything, but to take your time.
To take your time. And I've heard you say that it also takes dedication, that it's not.
Certainly takes dedication, yes.
Mm. Yeah.
It takes the development of wisdom. I've had a lovely friend here from Italy, and he's just written a PhD dissertation on wisdom. And I was helping him with it, and I was writing the introduction to it. And we were just talking, sharing how our lives had been brought together. He's 40 years younger than I am. But there we are working absolutely as if we were brother and sister. We're like the alchemical brother and sister working together on this great work, really, which was his dissertation on wisdom. But this, that wisdom is a very important word. And what he was saying was that we have to really understand that wisdom is an aspect of consciousness that hasn't been developed. It's a higher level of consciousness, if you like. And this is where we need to try and rise to, so that we comprehend things in a different way, in a more comprehensive overall kind of way, and where we can become leaders, wisdom leaders, in which we teach this new philosophy, if you like, because it is a philosophy, and where we bring back the wisdom of the Greeks, the wisdom of the Gnostics, the wisdom of the great mystics of Christianity and other religions, so that we really know to be sure of what we're teaching, that it's true and necessary and immensely valuable.
Hello, this is Paula Scatoloni. Thank you for listening to the Transformative Harmonics podcast. If this conversation has been interesting to you, I invite you to look at our new Transformative Harmonics Academy. I was inspired to create this membership and academy to bring together not only the transformative power of sound, but also a growing global community of faculty and teachers who are coming together to support you on your journey. So together, you will come and meet myself, others who are interested in spiritual growth, embodiment, soulful connection, opening their gifts, and we will gather weekly to explore, embody, and find our signature frequency. If this is interesting to you, feel free to check out the website or make a discovery call with me at paulascatoloni.com. And now back to the podcast. So there's a recognition that wisdom is universal and spans time. When it's wisdom, it doesn't, it's truth, right? It's truth.
Yeah.
And then there's what I'm taking from the books and the material is that we are rewriting some of the history that was inaccurately presented.
Inaccurately taught.
Inaccurately taught.
Appallingly badly taught, because people didn't know any different. You can't blame them at the particular time they were teaching, because they didn't know anything different. And Christianity in particular, and I think the other religions, have fallen into the pit of believing that we are down here and God is a transcendent, way out of our reach. And so we pray to God for help, or we pray to God for guidance or this or that, but not knowing that the guidance is within us. And that those religions have not taught the inner path. Many mystics like Meister Eckhart or Hildegard of Bingen have found the inner path, but they had to find it with a long journey of quest. The quest is a very important idea. I think we need to bring back the quest of the grail in our time, because we're living in a wasteland virtually, and we need healing, and we need to say to the old king, what ails thee? And he can die, the old king, the old way, the old paradigm, and let the young king come forward, and the young queen as well, king and queen together, so to speak, which is the new consciousness of humanity. which another great friend of mine called Christopher Bache, who I quote a lot in my book, he wrote a wonderful book called LSD and the Mind of the Universe, in which he took this journey into the mind of the universe. And what he brought forth was quite extraordinary, but it just shows a most moving panorama of how we are infinitely important to the universe and how what we do in our lives is of supreme importance to the whole, because we're part of the whole and what we do affects the whole. And he put it so beautifully in his book, so I would recommend that to people as well. LSD and the Mind of the Universe.
Yes, he was just on Heather Ensworth's podcast as
That's
well.
That's right, so he was. I saw that, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he speaks about the future human, which is such a lovely image, which is coming into being now with the groups that you mentioned all over the planet who are gathering together in different ways. Some are working to help the planet, some are working against war, some are working on healing like yourself, some are working on writing like me, but there are all kinds of different groups gradually sort of coming together, I think, to understand that they are working together on a single work, which is the alchemical work of transforming our consciousness.
Yes. And I feel like there's a group hive starting to happen where a connection, what I've noticed is, you know, one might be talking, having a conversation like this and someone emails you from a particular group that you're, so there's a, you know, like the iCloud in the we're connected
the synchronicity.
We're starting to, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. And it's wonderful because one, I couldn't have conceived in my 20s of what I know now. I couldn't have imagined it because I had no knowledge apart from my mother's messages. I had nothing to go on. But that what she gave me was the absolute grounding, which led me to Kabbalah eventually, and to the Shekinah, and to the understanding that that particular divinity, the Shekinah, because that's what my dream was about, that was the Shekinah, she is present with us in the world. She's not far distant in the heavens somewhere, but she is a divine presence within the world, within the earth, and within the earth consciousness, so to speak. And she's present within all our consciousnesses if we just pay attention to her presence there. And that's where the divine feminine comes in.
Yes, I teach it as it's a vibration that we can attune ourselves to when our nervous system is regulated.
Yeah.
But if we're in fight or flight, it's impossible to feel because it's difficult for those to coexist.
It is difficult. And I find myself, because I've got quite a difficult life with a very bedbound husband and carers and things. And I found dealing with paying the bills and getting the food and thinking about what to do to deal with all the practical side, it does make me leave my calm other alter ego, so to speak. So the mornings I spend doing everything to do with practical sides, and the afternoons are devoted to speaking to people like you or to thinking about my work or having time to listen to music or just sitting quietly doing nothing and just getting away from the hustle and bustle of the outer world, which at the moment is horrendous because it's very frightening to see what's happening in the Middle East. This was all predicted by the messages long, long ago in 1948. So it's all been, as it were, planned. It's unfolding as it's meant to unfold. It's no good fighting what's going on, but you can help the people who are caught up in it, and you can help the people who are witnessing it not to get too involved in worrying about it, but to create the new rather than to try and fix the old. You can't fix the old. It will die of its own accord in time.
And it needs to die.
I think it is dying. This year apparently is very important for the death and the change of consciousness.
Yes. I often talk to my community about that. And the more that we turn inward in those shamanic journeys and in the quietness that you're speaking of and the listening to nature, that's where those answers are going to come. What can you do? How can you be helpful? What is your role? But that can't happen if we're scrolling Facebook or,
no,
you know,
No, or if we're worrying about the paying of the bills, which yes. I had to do today for my husband.
Yes, yes. I do feel that that piece of being of the earth and of the planet and not of the planet at the same time is challenging.
It is challenging because it's carrying two hemispheres of reality in one mind.
Yes. Yes.
And I find that heart math is very valuable there in calming the mind. The methodologies given by heart math are helpful. And other things, other methods of meditation as well, of course.
Yes.
But the main thing is communion with other people, like we are communing with each other now about things that really interest us and which things we feel are very important. And that is very vital because in all this technology, we're losing the communion facility of knowing how to talk to people and how to have people around us whom we can talk to, because all this online business is actually not very good for the mind or the heart. We need the human contact.
Yeah, the physical touch.
The physical touch,
vibration, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And just the appearance of other people around us and talking to them or listening to what they're saying, that's terribly important.
Yes. Yes, there's so many different, in some ways, though, when we speak of these more practical changes that one could make, it does make it easy to consider where to start because they're very practical. Right? Time in nature, real life connection, quieting the nervous system.
Yes.
You can start
quieting
anywhere.
The nervous system is very important. And also things like cooking, things that you enjoy cooking is very therapeutic. Because you're actually touching nature, you're transforming nature into something that you're going to eat. And that is very soothing and calming for the nervous system.
Mm, yes, the tangible things that we did back when we were more, less technologically oriented.
Yes, absolutely. And things like looking after one's garden, growing vegetables, that sort of thing. I did a lot of that when I was younger. I'm too old to do it now, but it was very wonderful when I was growing potatoes or tomatoes or whatever. I really loved those things. I talked to them all the time.
Life, engaging with the other sentient forces of life.
Yeah, and using one's hands to actually connect with the earth and with the vegetables and things like that. So that was very good. And I'm also married to an artist, so I had an artist painting pictures were not necessarily on the same wavelength as me, but they were actually directed in the same direction, which was soul. He was bringing forward soul, yes, in his paintings.
Yes. And he is featured in your books as well, I noticed.
He is. They're paintings of his, two of his paintings there. Yes.
Beautiful.
They're very beautiful paintings.
Beautiful.
And I think if I'd married anybody else, if I'd married a businessman, a politician, a diplomat, I never would have done any work at all because I would have been devoted to his life. Whereas marrying this kind of man, very gentle, very quiet, very subtle sort of mind, I didn't have to struggle to do anything. I didn't enter into his life because he was living his life side by side with mine. But it wasn't getting entangled and in difficulties, so to speak.
What a beautiful partnership. We're all benefiting from that.
Yes, because it was him who made me able to, as I say in my book, to thank him for the 65 years of marriage in which he enabled me to do what I've done.
Yes. Behind the scenes support.
Well, just providing an environment in which I could grow my own plants, so to speak, and he could grow his as well.
Beautiful. And so can I ask a question just to clarify another piece that my community, they may often hear information out there, and I want to take this opportunity with you. When they hear the phrase, the way of the rose, how can we explain that to them in a more succinct way?
Well, as rose is a symbol of the heart, for one thing, and also a symbol of the soul, and also always an eternal symbol of the divine feminine, going right back to Isis, the goddess Isis. As I think I tell that situation in that chapter. But the rose is such a beautiful image to contemplate of the many petals which reveal the golden heart. And people send me roses from Australia and from California most beautiful roses, and each one is like a message from the divine, message from the transcendent, because it does represent the transcendent. It's the just as the lotus is the image of the East, the rose is the image, sacred image of the West. And it appears in the rose windows of Chartres, for example, which was made by people who really understood this inner teaching. And they put their best, their genius, in creating a building which would express everything that they knew and which would pass on the message to future generations. It's such a wonderful image.
Beautiful. And where is that building located?
In France, Chartres Cathedral. Yes, it's south of Paris, not too far away from Paris.
Now, France was an important place as we look at the history that's you address in the book. In particular, we're also coming up to Monday, which is the anniversary of the event that occurred with the Cathars in France and some of the early followers, those that were carrying on the teachings within. And so do we want to mention any piece about the lineage and how that lineage kind of carried forward? And for myself, I think that I know a lot of people that are taking trips to France.
Yes.
And to places where the divine feminine, there's a calling, there's sort of a calling home or a sense of...
Well, France was the center. And I think it's the lineage is so important because Mary Magdalene came from Egypt to the south of France in the middle of the first century, and she spent 20 years there teaching. So that gave a very deep ground, really, which would have been passed down the generations, the memory of that. And eventually it surfaced in the 12th century in the Church of the Cathars, which was called the Church of the Holy Spirit or the Church of Sophia, wisdom. So her lineage really brought forth that extraordinary manifestation of the teaching of Jesus and Mary Magdalene and also James, the brother of Jesus. And that church became diffused all over the Languedoc, which is called the southwest corner of France, and became very powerful. And of course, that drew the envy and rage of the church in Rome, which set out to destroy it, which it did. In the 13th century, it was totally destroyed. But we've all come back. I'm an old Cathar returned, and I was also an Essene. So we've come back to teach the old teaching again and to bring it back into consciousness. And that's what I've tried to do in my last book, because it has a big chapter on Mary Magdalene and another one on the Essenes, who were extraordinary. They called themselves children of the light, because they understood that we were all children of the light. Everyone in the whole planet is our children of the light, and that we're all brothers and sisters of each other. So killing each other is a total waste of time, and it's also a crime, which people nowadays don't seem to understand. They eliminate people like ninepins,
yes,
and because they're seen as the enemy,
yes,
and they don't realize that underneath we're all connected. And that we're all part of the great oneness, as it were, of life. So I'm trying to bring this back, and then had to go into history to do that. I had to give the rough history of Christianity, the history of the Gnostics, the history of the Essenes and their teaching, and show how it came up in the 12th century, again, with the image of the Holy Grail, because the Holy Grail was really a synonym for the divine feminine.
Yes.
Because it couldn't be taught openly because of persecution by the church. So it was wrapped up in the symbolism of the Holy Grail, this chalice or stone. It could be both. And then it was also told by wonderful legends by a man called Wolfram von Eschenbach in Germany in the 13th century. He wrote a book on the whole legend of the Grail in a most wonderful imagery, which has been written in Amsterdam. There is a center of alchemical studies in a building called the House of the Heads, and its title is the Embassy of the Free Mind. And it was set up in 2017 by a man called Joost Rietman, who had gathered together since his 20s as many alchemical manuscripts as he could accumulate. And he's got them all in as many as he could put into this House of the Heads or Embassy of the Free Mind. And so that was all apart, really. They found out a talk I'd given on someone called Esclarmonde de Foix, and they invited me to give a lecture down in that area of the Languedoc, south of Toulouse, where the Cathar Church was founded. And I gave that lecture in 2015 on Mary Magdalene and the wisdom tradition, and we became close friends. So there's that connection as well, which is coming up now. And the wife of Urs Rittmann has written a wonderful book on the Grail. She's published it quite recently, a beautiful illustrated book with the whole story by this Wolfram von Eschenbach in it. And so that is something people might, whoever, like they go to Amsterdam, they might go to that place. It's called the House of the Heads, and it's well known. Beautiful. It's got four heads on the outside. Beautiful. And so there's a tradition of bringing these threads together. It was a miracle that I met these people, or they connected with me, that I then went to France, that I then began to write more about alchemy, and I had already been writing. But the whole thing is an alchemy, really, of how life brings people together when it wants them to be together to do something. It arranges the meetings. And so we meet these extraordinary friends and lovely colleagues who've come back to do the work they were burnt at the stake for in the 1300s. But yeah. Now at least we're not being burnt at the stake, and we can speak freely to some extent, because there's a great deal of censorship in our culture. But we can still speak freely about these things.
Well, I do feel in my experience, there's still a sense of fear in the bones and a remembrance of when things didn't go so well when we spoke. And so that's still in the nervous system.
But the memory would be there. Mm-hmm. And one is very wary, particularly now, what's going on in the world and what's being prepared by governments under the counter and things like that, and censorship. One has to be aware of that old feeling of, is there something coming which is dangerous? And it's there's no harm in being aware of that and recognizing it. You don't have to wipe it out and say, I mustn't feel these feelings. Because one needs to carry both sides, so to speak, the dark and the light, without being unbalanced by either of them, without being inflated by the light or attacking the dark, as Trump is doing now.
Mm-hmm. Or staying back in your hut and not speaking because you're still stuck in what happened in the past.
In the fear.
So I think that's the... In my community, that's the healing work that people are doing. Because as they heal the nervous system and the trauma across lifetimes, then they're more apt to come forward to embody their gift.
That must be a wonderful thing for people to participate in. You're very wonderful that you're doing that and helping people. I think I have great admiration for you.
They're usually the medicine women that don't know they're medicine women until they awaken to that. And so they're just remembering what they have carried with them through other lifetimes. But we need them all right now. So
we certainly do. And also we need children to be brought up close to nature and close to the feeling that there is a great mystery in life and something marvelous waiting for them to understand. And that they can learn about it through nature and through touching the trees, touching the flowers and things like that. Children absorb an awful lot before the age of six, between sort of four and six. Very important time.
Yes.
Because you awaken the sense of wonder. And that if you can awaken that, it will lead you.
Yes.
Yes. And rather than putting them on iPads.
Absolutely. Yeah. No iPads if possible, and no social media until they're really 16 or able to cope with it, because their brains are not formed when they're young. No. And they can be manipulated far too easily and influenced because they have no grounding. Their brains haven't developed enough to have the understanding that everything they're listening to is not true.
Yes. So there's a layer of protection that parents are needing to provide from the larger culture that does require them to have parameters around what their children ingest. I speak about it as frequency that we're always taking in from the outside. So to be cognizant of what you're ingesting, because it all goes in. And we want to be have discernment.
Yes, and children aren't aware of what's going in. It just goes in, and then it works inside them like a sort of, I don't know how to call it really, a yeast within them, which brings forth unsavory fruits or unsavory results. And it's so tragic that there's suicides. Children are led to suicide by what they hear on TikTok or whatever. It's tragic.
Yes. Yes. I think we're at the edge of how far humanity has gone with the what you call the solar age, and so we can't go any further. We have to swing back that pendulum now and understand what has been lost and how to retrieve it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How do we retrieve this again?
But more important, people are becoming aware that there is something to be retrieved, and they're setting about it either in groups like yours or in listening to teachings and webinars, following different teachers. And the teachers have appeared because they're meant to appear, and they have appeared, which is wonderful, really. And they've all been probably as either Essenes or Cathars or mystics or whatever in the past, and they have to overcome the fear, as you say, of past life experiences, but they realize that there are dangers in this life which are not so clear as they were in another life, but they're just as dangerous, like the being sucked into pornography, for example. That's one big danger for men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there's so many opportunities for addiction and distraction away from that deeper work of the soul. And so any opportunity, I think, for the outside to infiltrate and keep us out of that quest for self-realization, that is what we're all competing with right now.
I think I would say one thing, that depression is actually a call from the soul to pay attention to it. I didn't realize that until I went into analysis myself with depression with somebody before Dr. Hella Adler. But that was a big lesson to learn, because it was, how can the soul actually call? It can't get up in the street and say, hey, I'm here. You know, it has to use subtle methods of pulling you down, so to speak, until you finally wake up and say, what's going on? And what is the voice that's calling me and telling me to kill myself because I'm so unhappy, and get to the root of that, you know?
Yeah, it's a beautiful reframe of something that we tend to just give medication for.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of exploring the way the body is speaking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing. In The Dream of the Cosmos, you also speak about the electromagnetic field of the heart, not just the heart as a metaphor and the heart as relational, but you are speaking about the electromagnetics and I speak about the Schumann resonance and how do we come back into that frequency of the Schumann resonance and that being the influence of that on the endocrine system and all the different aspects of our physiology. So I'm wondering if we could speak about that.
Well, I think it's fascinating that the whole of the Earth is just one huge electromagnetic field, thousands and millions of fields interacting with each other, and the field of the Earth interacting with the cosmic electromagnetic field, many different planets and bodies in the cosmos, so to speak. So, and all our all our inventions, like the cell phone and the towers, the 4G and 5G towers are very dangerous and very destructive of the electromagnetic field of humans and animals, because, of course, all animals have electromagnetic fields as well. So if one can see it from the point of view, the invisible field that's all around us, something that we have to look after and care for, not adulterate, not injure, become more aware of these things, which is very difficult because the whole thrust of technology is to have more and more and more of these huge towers, for example, these 5G towers, and then there'll be 6G after that. And they have no idea of what they're doing, of how they're ruining the magnetic field of the Earth. So you have to fight that. There are ways that you can, organizations, you can fight it through. Also, the interference with the geomagnetic field of the Earth as such, and by geoengineering with chemtrails in the sky and other things, such something called HAARP, which can influence the weather at a far distance. We need to know about these things, and you need to fight them, because the government is on a track to develop more and more of this technology, because it sees the future and knows nothing about the soul and nothing about the sacredness of the body and the magnetic fields interacting with each other. So it plows on regardless on its technological path, so to speak.
Yes.
But I call this the wrong path, not on the right path with that.
Yes.
So it may be that citizens in America particularly will have to stand up and say, we have had enough of this, because you're destroying the magnetic field of the planet that we're all living in. And all these technological advances, for instance, these vast data centers that use up huge quantities of water and huge quantities of electricity, where they're processing all our data, all data. Why do they need it all? Why is it necessary to have all this? It's something that's just been invented, and people have rushed into it. How exciting. And also transhumanism is another thing we have to be very aware of, because it's put forward by men who know nothing about the soul. And they think they can make themselves immortal up in the cloud by creating cyborgs or bodies that are not human. But once they've done that, they can't go back into the human body, and they will have destroyed the possibility of further evolution of their body. Anyway, it's a crazy world, but we have to be aware of that, because it's just as dangerous as burning at the stake.
So technology can take us deeper and deeper away from soul, while let's go to the other end, while expanding to the concept of other planetary systems and other planetary intelligence brings us closer to soul.
I think so, because we're not alone in the universe. And I think, as probably Heather Ensworth knows, there are planetary consciousnesses which are probably millions of years ahead of us and could probably teach us a great deal, and from stopping making mistakes that they may have made in the past but may have been able to correct, whereas we're at the stage of making the mistakes and not knowing that we need to correct them. So I think we can learn a lot from our planetary cousins. And I would welcome the arrival of extraterrestrials on this planet. I would hope that they would, perhaps they're already here, they would engage with us and people wouldn't be frightened of them, but would learn from them.
Mm-hmm. I hope so as well. So there's so many choices for people to make each day when they wake up, of where to put their consciousness and what to be, to allow in. And then where to take a stand and set a boundary and be in their sovereignty, right, of how they want their life to be directed. And I hope this conversation has given them something to think about, and certainly hope that they turn to your work. I've read three of the books, plus the children's book, which is beautiful. I wish, my daughter is now 15, but I think I'm going to give her a copy for Christmas, because I don't think it's just for children.
No, it isn't. I tell you what, I've made audios of The Dream of the Cosmos and the Bird book, which isn't up yet, but it's done. And I've made an audio of the latest book as well, which will be all up on my website and also on YouTube within about 2 months. So your daughter could listen to that there if she'd rather listen with me reading it. Or she can have you read it to her. That would be lovely too.
Oh, beautiful. Yes, I think that would be a preference to audio and hearing your resonance as you read it. So thank you.
Yes, I love writing it. It was a lovely book to write. The only one I left out, the only valley I left out, was greed, which I should have put in. I got all the other ones.
Right now.
Greed is very important.
Well, Anne, it has been such a pleasure sharing this space with you. And I thank you for moving around to the different topics. They're all so important. I feel like we could have a podcast on each one. But I just wanted to give my listeners a chance to meet you, to hear your wisdom, to share the space, to feel your resonance, and to know where to find you. Because I do believe that your website and everything connected to what you're doing is a huge resource in this evolutionary shift of consciousness. So I appreciate that we connected.
Well, I'm so glad I've met you too, because I can see that you're a kindred soul, and I wish we lived in the same country.
Yeah, meeting lots of kindred souls across the water. So, but I am a Brit by birth. I'm half British, so I may be on your soil at some point.
Well, that's nice. I'm half American because my mother was American. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe we'll meet in person.
Maybe we'll meet. I can't travel anymore, unfortunately. I can't go beyond my house, but I can get travel in this way, which is so lovely because I can meet people like you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Anne. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you for being a part of the Transformative Harmonics podcast. If this discussion resonated with you, please subscribe, share the episode, or write a review. This helps to support the expanding community around embodiment, sound, and conscious living. You can visit Transformative Harmonics at paulascatoloni.com to find out more about my work, forthcoming classes, and the Transformative Harmonics Academy. You can also reach out and connect with me on Instagram. My handle is at paulascatoloni. I write regularly on Substack at Signature Frequency Living. Until next time, take good care, and thank you for being part of the journey.